So today we are joining with Dhamma discussion in English medium. Actually, this discussion used to conduct on Tuesdays around 8:30. Since when Thursday is free, so we thought of shifting it to Thursday till Mahathero returns. And we were discussing Tuataka Sutta. Actually, we just started that last week. Tuataka Sutta. So Tuataka basically means kind of quick, doing things quickly. So we can see whether it's giving kind of a secret, maybe for our quick enlightenment. So likewise, there may be some interesting points highlighted in this sutta, which is talking about the quickly attaining or quickly accomplishing one's goal and what are the things to be conducted in order to achieve it. And today there are some members of the Sangha participating and maybe some joining from outside as well. So I think last time we discussed the first two verses. Pucchamitang adiccha bandung vivekang santi padancha mahesing. Kathang diswa nibbati bhikkhu anupadiyano lokasmin kinchi. So that's the question asked from the Buddha. So the question is basically talking about giving the name for Buddha as Adichya Bandhu, the kind of the relative of the sun, or kinsman of the sun, and that's a synonym used for Buddha. And Vivekang Santi Padancha Mahesing. So Vivekang representing the Nibbana, the peaceful state of the mind. And there can be various further explanations like three types of viveka: kaya viveka, chitta viveka, upadhi viveka. And then kathan diswa nibbati bhikkhu. So by seeing what that the monk would attain nibbana. Anupadiyano lokasmin kinchi, without clinging to anything in the world. And then Buddha gives the answer like Mulam papancha sankhaya manta asmiti sabbang uparunde yakachi tanha jhattang thasang vinaya sada satosike. So this very verse is very very interesting and concisely Buddha presents the whole teaching or whole practice. Mulam papancha sankhaya manta asmiti sabbang uparunde. So the papancha sankha, so basically the various notions, various signs, various denominations, various combinations, various concepts, measurements, comparisons. So all these we can consider as papancha sankha, which is causing various conceptual proliferation in one's mind. So in order to cause conceptual proliferation in one's mind, so there are many, we can say the sources, so many products, many outside objects, we can say. Those are available and our mind tends to grab them, compare them, measure them, tally them, and we attach so many labels, names to them, and all these can be considered as papancha sankha and papancha sanya sankha, both. And ultimately the dynamic result is the conceptual proliferation happens in one's mind. So the interesting point asked here, Mulam papancha sankhaya asmiti sabbang uparunde manta. So basically from manta here means the wisdom. Through wisdom one may understand the source, the very root cause of conceptual proliferation is asmi. Asmi represents as I am. So the notion I am. Everyone considers that there's a person here, there's an individual here. That is, I am here, I am living, I am talking, I am seeing, I am hearing, likewise. So, now a person, through wisdom, he understands, okay, this is the exact root cause of this whole conceptual proliferation and he tries to prevent it. Uparunde, basically trying to prevent it. Yakachi tanha ajhattang. And if there is any further internal craving available, Tasang Vinaya, so in order to further relinquish that, further abandon that, sada sato sikke. Constantly, one may mindfully restrain oneself, mindfully say discipline oneself. So this is what we actually have discussed. And if someone like to, Buddha, or someone likes to add to these things, and then actually we can start today's verse from the next verse. And this is what we already have discussed. So if one like to contribute further, I welcome that.
So maybe just in brief, mindfulness here has a double meaning. One is the practice of mindfulness, meaning you mindfully know what you're doing, but then mindfully also has this other meaning of you remember the teachings. And very much here he is pointing out this target. Like when we travel with the North Star at night. We keep the North Star as our guidance and as our navigation. And here he's pointing out that the root is this conceit, I am. And because of this I am, there are proliferations, like a spreading. One of the great arahants was enlightened by washing her clothes. And she would see the water spreading around. And each time the water splashed out from her bucket, washing her clothes, the water would spread more and more easily. And this is a kind of a way that we should think about. The more we indulge our conceitedness, the more we indulge this sense of I am, the more easily it sort of spreads. So people with a big ego tend to get a bigger ego, because they don't constrain their sense of I am. And this I am is a shorthand for, oh, I am the king, I am great, I am marvelous. You know, it's I am is just the, I don't know what you want to call it, that part of the sentence that's pointing towards yourself, and you're puffing yourself up. And this is the North Star for a bhikkhu, for somebody who is really striving for attainment of Nibbana. And again, just reminding people again that Nibbana means to extinguish or to just put out. So you Nibbana the fire, you Nibbana the light switch. It's not a complicated word, but it has this underlining very philosophical idea that we see this existence as a process. That there is a process of rebirth, and every time you die, the switch goes off and you're reborn again. The problem is that this kind of the switch, that we're not able to switch off being reborn, so we're constantly reborn into states of suffering. And this problem is the suffering. It's not so much that one life is so bad, it's just that there is always another life waiting. The switching mechanism is going to automatically reload you into another life form. And so the goal of Nibbana is to stop this switch from happening, stop this rebirth from happening. And the key way we can find this switch to turn it off is I am. And we keep tracing back to the source of the problem, as it's called here, the mula, the root. The entire root of the problem is I am, and then this proliferation, as he calls it, a proliferation or a spreading from I am into all the other troubles of the world. But we can reverse it. So the way we find I am is we trace back along the path of the proliferation to the source of the kind of wetting, as it were, the source of the spreading. And we will constantly find I am is at that root. So it's a way of finding. It's just like we would look at the smoke particles in the sky and we would trace it down to the fire that's burning, causing that fire. So this is something we need to be mindful of. We need to be mindful of what we're looking for. And then steadily, day by day by day, we're mindful of whatever we're doing and our activities, our engagements, and we keep on tracing it back, and we see that I am is the description of the fire, and the proliferations are like the smoke that are spreading outwards. So we know what to look for and we know how to look for it. And this is mindfulness. Mindfulness is both doing the job and then keeping in mind the instructions that are necessary. But anyway, this is just a quick thought on these two. Maybe we can...
And I'll add to that just a little bit regarding I am, how to practice mindfully with the removal of for the removal of I am. So it was said in the commentary that the Bhikkhu Bodhis, that I am regarding form, desire, I am, and latent tendency, I am. Also in regard to feeling, knowing that as I am, the desire, I am, and latent tendency, I am. Perception, also volitional activities and consciousness, by contemplation of the body, feelings, mind, and mental phenomena. We can use this in our meditation to notice how I am is arising in regard to form, feelings, perceptions, volitional activities, and consciousness, and therefore becoming having wisdom arising to see how a self is conceived and how the conceit I am arises.
Yeah, actually this is being further discussed in two forms, as you mentioned. So that is the, we can say, the gross level of misunderstanding, we can say, rather than telling understanding. It's a kind of a misidentification as a person, as a being, as someone, as myself. So that is with respect to the one particular aggregate or several aggregates considering as a self or belonging to the self, or I am existing within the self, or the body. Say for example, if we consider the form aggregate, now I am the form aggregate, so I am this body. So recognizing immediately, identifying immediately as this is I am. Basically, it is a very direct identification that this body itself is I am myself. The other possibility is that I have a kind of a link between this body and myself. Myself is maybe a kind of something else, but I own this body. This body belongs to me. So kind of a linkage is there. That is another possibility. So I am myself is something big, and I belong this body. So that is another relationship we can have. The other possibility is, so I am something big, and part of this I, the big I, is this body. There may be several other parts as well, but one part of this whole I is this body. And the other possibility is, this body has a small part of I. So within the body, there is myself. So likewise, there are typically, it is mentioned, for each aggregate, there are four possibilities of this, what we call as a sakkayaditti, the personality view. So that is the gross form of, we can say that I am a person, an individual. So we recognize this whole body as myself, or this various feelings as myself, various perceptions, signs, etc. as myself, or various mental formations as myself, or all the cognitive processes as myself. So then it can expand to different other, say, vibhakti, what's the denomination? So, classifications, different classifications also are possible. So likewise, the whole thing becomes more complicated, and it's as Venerable Buddharakita mentioned, so it's spreading, it is going out, and it is more and more descriptive and going out so much, and so that it becomes a whole proliferation. So the other, another interesting point is, now even one is able to overcome this, still some subtle sense of I am still available. So this is very, very difficult to remove. That only be removed when one attains arahantship. So that is very beautifully mentioned in the Khemaka Sutta. One interesting sutta is called Khemaka Sutta. So that Venerable Khemaka is a non-returner, anagami. So and he is getting closer to his parinibbana, or rather say the final passing away, because he is pretty old now, and he is bedridden, and now other monks wants to verify whether he is an arahant. So this is a very interesting part. So typically, So the monks are not allowed to mention their attainments to the others. But one exception is given during the deathbed. So within the deathbed, if someone is coming and asking, say your attendant or someone is asking, Bhante, what is your attainment? What are your results through this whole, say, spiritual life, brahmacharya life? Then Buddha has mentioned, okay, then you can indicate it. And there are certain other elder monks, they want to verify whether this Venerable Khemaka is an arahant, because he's a very good monk. And they send a messenger to Venerable Khemaka and asking so and so. Yeah. So then actually Venerable Khemaka mentioned, I am not considering this body as myself. And I don't consider like that. I don't consider feelings as myself. I don't consider perceptions as myself. I don't consider formations as myself. I don't consider various consciousness as myself. But still I have a sense of I am. So very interesting. Very, very interesting. So then he tried to explain that, but he failed to convene the message. Then he somehow take his walking stick and approach the other elder monks. And they started discussion. So he's giving a very interesting example here to communicate. So he's telling now, if the fragrance is coming from a flower, now from where can you say it is coming? From its petals, or I don't know. What are the other parts are there? Different parts are available in the flower. So you can't say exactly from this particular part the fragrance is coming. But if you consider the whole flower, a beautiful pleasant fragrance is available. So likewise he say, even though I am not identifying particularly this particular form aggregate, perceptions aggregate, feeling aggregate, whatever aggregate as I am, still I still have a kind of a subtle sense of I am. So while he is explaining this, and he attained arahantship. So this is a very interesting example that in the five types of vimutta ayatana, five types of possibilities in the liberation. So this is one very good example in the attainment of liberation through while preaching to others. So anyway, so there it is mentioned, so this even though the Sakkaya Ditti is abandoned, the gross form of I am is abandoned, that personality view is abandoned, still this sense of I am still available, even the non-returner has this sense of I am. So the arahants only may remove that. That is why it is maybe as you mentioned. So there are subtle forms. The conceit I am, and then the craving, the desire happens due to I am. And the other thing is the anusaya I am, the latent tendency I am. So these are very subtle forms of I am. So that only may be abandoned when one attains arahantship. So that's of, therefore, I mean, as this verse mentioned, for the whole gamut of conceptual proliferation, this root cause lies in I am. Yeah. So anything else? Okay, then we can move forward. So we can get into the next verse. So let me simply tell it in Pali, then you all can put into English. Yankinchi dhamma mabhinya. Yankinchi dhamma mabhinya. Ajjattam athavapi bahidda. Natena manang kubbetha nahi sa nibbuti satang vutta. Yeah, can you, one of you, tell the short meaning? Yankichi dhamma mabhinya ajhattang atavapi bahidda.
Whatever one might know, whether internally or externally, one should not be obstinate on that account, for that is not called quenching by the good.
So in Sinhala book it is mentioned, if for the Sinhala audience, if one tamaha kerehu ho upadhyadi bahira pujjaleku kerehu kulinatvadi gunayakho danne nam e karune mane nokaranne buddhadi satpurushayan visin e manonnatiya nibbutiyai nokiyena ladamai yankinchi dhamma mabinya ajjattam athavapi bahidda natena manam kubbeta nahisa nibbuti satam vutta. Can you repeat the English one?
Whatever one might know, whether internally or externally, one should not be obstinate on that account, for that is not called quenching by the good.
Correct. So basically, I think this points out another interesting part. Now, so how this conceit I am is spreading? So what are the possibilities available? Now, one possibility is, as this verse mentioned, so there may be various different kinds of acquisitions that one may have. So, for example, given in the Sinhala translation is the one's caste. If one is from a higher caste, so that can be a cause to look down the others and consider oneself as a big person, as a, say, a gifted person, a more superior person. And it may cause a kind of a conceit, and it may cause what we call as the adhimana or atimana, it can. And that caused to further think with respect to that, and talking, thinking, proliferating with respect to that point. So this now, so this asmiman, sorry? Third. So therefore, one point is that if one is this sort of born to a higher caste, then it should not be used. The advice here is it should not be used look down the others. And the other thing is, the Buddha and the others, the wise people, never consider such kind of acquisition as something to consider as Nibbana, in that sense. So someone can be happy by being so born into a higher caste, and they may consider, okay, now I am done, I am in a good state, I am born into this higher class, I am really gifted, I am a wealthy, so many possibilities are there. So they may simply think, okay, this is it, all others are in the lower state, they are in a lower caste, but I am in the higher caste, so I am done. So they may consider, okay, this is Nibbana. So Buddha mentioned here, so this is not the attainment. So nahisa nibbuti satang utta. So don't think these things as ever as the Nibbana, or these things as ever the something that can be really dependent on. So likewise, so various possibilities are there to develop conceit, develop this kind of mana, and many possibilities are there. Just one example we have taken, that is the higher caste. The other thing could be the one's richness or wealthiness, and another may be learnedness, another may be, say, one's attainments on to the, particularly to the samatha side, jhana, it can be. So if you attain, say, for example, fourth jhana, probably you can look down another person who is in this first jhana, or who doesn't have any jhana at all. You are simply comparing. Always the one attribute of mana is the comparison. So you are comparing yourself with another person always. So maybe you are with good sila, and another person may be with not that good sila. So you may even compare with that. So you are protecting kind of a good dutanga, may be austere practice. Say you are going on village pindapatha, and but the others are simply partaking the food taken to the monastery. Then you may think, okay, I am the best monk, I am the most austere monk. So I am the one who is continuing the Buddha's lineage. So likewise, you can think high about yourself and looking down the others. And if you are a really learned monk, okay, I have several degrees, I have good Buddhist studies and all sort of things. I am the one who is knowledgeable, I am the one teaching, so others are my students. That also be a reason for one to have conceit. And if you have many followers, if you have many students, so the teacher can become more conceited. So likewise, there are so many possibilities that we can think of how conceit can arise. It's a very, very deeply rooted, subtle defilement. So that's why very difficult to recognize it and difficult to abandon it. It's deeply rooted, deeply rooted. That's why we have to be very, very grounded ourselves, very, very humble in that sense. Then only we can recognize how this conceit is arising within ourselves. Otherwise, it is very difficult to recognize it. Yeah. Anything Buddha recognizes?
So just going back over it, whatever one might know, whether internally or externally, again, internally, he's referring to, you know, your own mind or your achievements within your own mind. And then externally is, you know, about the world all around you. So are you have an expertise in the world. So most people are focused externally in the world. They are focused on external achievements, how other people will see them. And it's external, like I live in this place, I live in this street, my kids go to this school, this is the kind of car I have, this is the kind of life I lead. And they're very concerned about the external perception that other people have of them. And this is ordinarily what we mean by, that person is doing really well. They live in that area, that's the posh area, and these other people, they're not doing so well, they live in the slum area. And you know so much about the person just based on their postcode. And slight differences in their accent and how they say a word indicates, those people are from that area and these people are from this other area. It's very external category of like how successful you are in the world. And internally is, again, as Venerable Chandaratana mentioned, is internal achievements might be intellectual. I'm not that rich, but I'm very learned. I'm not that, I don't live in this posh area because I'm more artistic and I live in this other area and it's really cool over there. So it's a very internal sense of I am this kind of special person, or I am that kind of special person. And again, as he was referring to about the we always know the conceit of the superior type. But there is a very we need to be very careful and understand the conceit of the inferior person too. It's like, oh, I'm so humble, and I do everything for my children, for my family, and I live a very simple life. I'm very humble, and I'm very kind, and I'm very generous, and I'm a kind of a martyr, and I sacrifice myself for the good of others, and I always put other people ahead of myself. And so there's this kind of righteousness and moral superiority that can come through, that even though they're inferior in an external sense of the word, internally they feel very superior. And if you ever read Jeeves and Woodhouse, Woodhouse, the author, and he had these characters, Jeeves and Wooster. It's constantly playing on this sense of inferiority or superiority between the upper classes and the lower classes. It's extremely funny. But in a way, both are kind of like set in their status, one as a servant and the other as the lord. And they both, it's just really funny observations of how people who are externally, shall we say, wealthy versus somebody who's externally poor can be kind of so interdependent on each other. And this whole dynamic, it's really funny. And in India, like this Jeeves and Woodhouse are considered like, you know, just classics of literature. So we should understand the inferiority complex as much as the superiority complex, because actually a lot of people in the religious world can have this kind of inferior kind of mode about them. I'm so humble and so on. So we fail. We don't have these external things like, I don't need such wealth, and you know, I'm a person of the people, and I take the bus and I walk. I'm not one of those monks that has to be driven everywhere, you know. You know, there's this really sort of, it's funny. It's really funny.
If you are not getting to the superiority, then you can be caught to the inferiority. Yeah. So likewise, I mean, we somehow get caught in other terms. Many possibilities are there.
It's really funny. Somebody said to me recently, you know, well, of course, as a monk living in Sri Lanka, you know, you enjoy such privilege, you know, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, like I just thought it was really funny because, You know, it's quite poor here in Sri Lanka overall. And as a monk, I live in the forest, and you know, and this is a person who enjoys great privilege in Australia, in materially, externally. But I was somehow being judged as a beneficiary of great privilege for some reason, you know. And I just thought, wow, this is really funny. But wisdom finds it funny. So that's why I mentioned Jeeves and Wooster again. Like, you really have to laugh at this because it's a kind of tragedy. And it's a constant. And this idea that obstinate is a quality of shame. And shame is very, very close to conceitedness again. So of all the different kinds of emotions, for instance, we have anger, it's trying to protect ourselves. We have fear, it's also protecting us to run away. And we come down to shame. Shame is protecting our sense of conceitedness. And we notice shame because of its obstinate nature. So I always remember growing up near, I had my next door neighbors when I was growing up were very poor. They lived in a poor workman's house. And they really were poor. And I remember they were very proud of their poverty. You know, they were like, we are the real people, the old people, and we keep up the traditional ways. And that's why we don't do anything. We don't do anything to improve ourselves because we're maintaining the old ways. And when I moved into my hut here, the hut was in fairly poor condition, and I took 5 months to repair the hut. And I said it to Venerable Mahatero, and, you know, I needed the support of the Sangha to you know, get some items and goods to repair the hut. And I said, this is like going on for a long time that nobody has repaired this hut. And he said, yeah, they're very conservative fellows. Conservative meaning they wouldn't lift a finger to repair the hut. That, you know, it takes a progressive kind of chap like yourself to come in here and sweep the place clean again, you know.
It can happen in you, so I am the one going to, you know.
I have a problem. I'm not conservative. I'm not able to just, you know, take it like it is.
They are just conservatives, but I am the one.
I'm coming in disturbing the nature and disturbing the whole process, you know. I'm not conservative enough, like, to leave the whole thing fall down around me. It was just really funny. I thought it was really hilarious. This, I never understood conservative in this way before, like somebody who will not lift a finger. And so this is kind of obstinate. And then if you say to these fellows, like, hey, why don't you fix your hut? It's falling in and the water is flowing through the walls. They're like, oh, I'm not here to do that. I'm here for the higher attainment of Nibbana and, you know, extinguishing the suffering. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's so hard to find a good hut in the forest. And these fellows are letting it fall down. And it's like, it's really poor. So I was like, even though I had lived in rich places like, you know, Ireland and Australia and all these places, like, there's no hut and there's no opportunity to practice and there's no support. And here it is privileged, actually, to have this hut. And here these fellows were letting it completely fall down. And they would sweep all the leaves into one area of the compound. And then over 50 years, these leaves had built up into like about 3 foot of clay. It had been so much. And then when we cleaned this place that was like a heap, there was glass and all sorts of rubbish built up over the years. So it took generations of very conservative monks to cause this kind of neglect in the place. So it's really this kind of conceit, this obstinate quality is very close to, it is shame. So shame is like for me, when I notice myself experiencing shame, when I notice myself being put down, like, oh, I'm this very privileged monk who lives in Sri Lanka.
Kind of an insult?
It's an insult. Yeah, it's an insult and it's a kind of compliment at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's, I know when I have that that shame is happening. Mm-hmm. That's, then I notice, this is close to conceitedness. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. the hallmark mm-hmm. in myself and the person speaking. Mm-hmm. And I know when somebody's pushing my buttons, is shaming me, then, thank you very much. Thank you for...
To recognize that.
Yeah, I'm close to the fire. Uh-huh. And this quality of looking for the conceit and tracing it back and always being mindful and always seeking to remove that quality. And only wisdom can do this. Only wisdom can do this. You cannot suppress it with samadhi or as they would say in Malaysia, suck it up. You just suck it up. Somebody insults you and you're patient about it. Of course, that's the first sila. You don't punch them because they insulted you. But you kind of go, thank you for showing me where my red buttons are. And when they press it, you feel that conceited pain. And you're like, here's where I need to do my work and bring this to peace mindfully, but also with wisdom ultimately to uproot that defilement. And you know you're kind of uprooting it because it's funny as hell. It is a kind of a Jeeves and a Wooster kind of game that's going on inside the mind. I always remember Godwin was talking to a forest monk and he said, what is your perspective of the world to the senior taro? And he said, the world is funny, sometimes tragically comic, but nevertheless funny. And this was his attitude. And I think that's one of the key hallmarks of wisdom is, you know, it's funny. You know that insult, that little hurtful thing that person is saying to you is kind of funny and you laugh at it. And like I said about the conservative monks and the hut falling down, it's funny as hell. We don't take it personally anymore. And in that way, we're liberated from that conceitedness and that obstinate quality that comes with shame. And the translator here, Bhikkhu Bodhi, changes the word nibbana to quenching. So this is a kind of a practice that some of the Western monks have, or some of the Western translators have, of trying to translate nibbana as a word of meaning in English, like quenching, rather than leaving it in the Pali form of nibbana, because it's a process. Again, a lot of people don't understand that nibbana is not a state, it's not a place, like I will go to heaven, I will go to nibbana. It is a process of quenching, and quenching this ego, and quenching this obstinacy that comes with shame, and then digging down under it into the underlining fire of I am. Anyway, that's just some thoughts.
I'll just add a little bit to that. So in regard to obstinate quenching on that account, being obstinate about who I am, and so we should quench it. The good being good persons, Buddhas, their disciples, and Pacheka Buddhas. And so we are practicing mindfully, and it just reminds me that meditation of one teacher used to say, bringing us back to the zero state before we start adding our own likes and dislikes and who we are. What family we come from, what jhanas we have obtained, we are always socializing ourselves with others, comparing ourselves with others. And so again, coming back to the practices of mindfully contemplating the body as a body and mind as a mind and mental states, being mindful, coming back to just what is this sensation that's arising. By mindfulness, by practicing body contemplation, sensations, and practicing mindfulness, we can go to a deeper level that's before all this socialization, that we as human beings just naturally, that's what we are. And when we start to do this, then we understand more deeply than understand the true nature of things, and are, at least for a time, we practice the practice of being with the present moment, being with things as they truly are at the basic level of sensation. And then we can come back to socialization and see how we're conceited and how we're seeking, you know, a position in the world, and our conceited ways. Hopefully we can then giving up some of those, and then come back to meditation and come back to the zero state.
The other thing is as you pointed out, now one can say, one can compare oneself as, I am more spiritual, but you are not so spiritual. Say now, as monks, okay, we can say, okay, we have abandoned the lay life and we have relinquished the lay life, so I am a monk. So with comparing the lay people, now you can simply look down them and say, okay, you all guys are still ignorant, and you all guys are simply following your typical, say, sensual pleasures, but I am not. So I am a kind of a supreme person. I am quite different person. So therefore, monkhood is another very rich area where the conceit can arise. So there are, I know very well, I myself may have very well, that many monks can have this conceit, because they feel they are very special breed. I am a special person, while the huge amount of other people are following their typical sensual desires. So I am a special person who have privilege, as they mentioned, privilege to leave that society, leave that whole ignorant people, and now I am trying to do something more noble. So it's something to appreciate, yes, why not? But still, comparing and having conceit within ourselves as monks is something that kind of a trap we mostly can get into, because they others, the lay people, come and offer food to us, they respect to us, they bow to us, and they always keep us on the pedestal and venerate us. So all these things are indicating that I am a super person, I am a superman, I am an exception. So that ultimately start deeply rooting in myself, then I am looking down others very easily. So you are just an ignorant lay person. So likewise, I can have a lot of conceit because of the monkhood as well.
Alsarai Swaminasa, and thank you Maha Sangha for all of your comments so far. Not to veer too much like off the sutta per se, but there is, I think, one sutta, I think it's from the Anguttara Nikaya, and I think it was translated to, when I was reading it online, it was governing principles. And so it's like saying, like, you know, not for the sake of, I think to my knowledge, what it was saying is not for the sake of like food or robes or, you know, I think it was something like that, you know, that we have gone forth, you know. So, you know, having this like idea like, oh yeah, you know, I'm a monk, and you know, you have to remember, you know, why it was, I think it was going on to say that, you know, it's for the sake of ending suffering, you know, that's what I remember it saying, is for the sake of ending suffering. That's why you've more or less ordained. So it's not for the sake of like these nice kind of things like gifts and, you know, and offerings and, you know, praise, fame, you know, gain offerings. It's for the purpose of ending suffering. And that's, you know, to end suffering is the reason someone is supposed to become a monk. So, and then also, I have seen in the past, with regards to lay people, like lay people, you know, you know, the Dhamma, like, you know, they would, I have in the past, I have seen, some lay people, you know, they, may, you know, you could say that they're more knowledgeable about the Dhamma, or they know at least some things about the Dhamma, and then they will speak to each other, you know, and attack each other. Like, you know, I've seen it on social media before. Perhaps you could see it on maybe online forums too. And, you know, again, not to like veer too off the sutta, but you know, then in the simile of the water snake or the water snake simile, the Buddha is talking about how, you know, some people, you know, they'll study the Dhamma for the purpose of attacking others and defending themselves in debate. So even the Dhamma, the knowledge of the Dhamma can be used as conceit. It can become a form of grasping, you know, and conceit I am. So, and then, you know, I think it's safe to say that there are a good number of people in the world too who, you know, want to get recognized for what they're doing, even like, you know, like maybe 15 minutes on the nightly news or something like that, you know, and, oh, you did this, and, you know, and they're maybe like talking about like something they did or, you know, like that even that can become conceit, you know, that even that can become a form of conceit. And so conceit can take so many different forms. And, you know, Bhante here was, I think, earlier mentioning the inferiority aspect, where it's like, you know, you like think that you're doing all these good things, or is that what it is, where externally it's where you think that you're like kind of like doing all these good things, or I'm a good person or something like that. Yeah, you know, like people can like, you know, think that I'm a good person and you know, maybe like start complaining, oh, like, you know, why do they do this to me, I'm such a good person, you know, like complaining, like you know, like yeah, you know. And so yeah, conceit can take so many different forms. And wanting external validation even for what you're doing, like wanting people to kind of recognize you, or you know, not being content with yourself and what you're doing, you know, even that can be like a subtle form of conceit, you know. So yeah,
so another thing is that Buddha, when I feel that when he established the sasana, the sangha order, so probably he might have definitely have seen that the possibility of arising conceit in ourselves, since we are more into the spirituality and this sort of a practice. But the interesting point is when we go on begging food, arms round, so then we are in the form of kind of a beggar almost like. So we are not asking food, but we simply stand and we simply expecting someone else's generosity. So that is a huge area, or a real blow to our ego. Because even though I am a high class person, I am just no one, I mean, I have nothing to eat today. Please, can you help me? So it's a complete cutting off that ego. So when you are simply going, and sometimes it is not that everyone is welcoming you, everyone is respecting you and offering food. Some will chase you, some will blame you, some will look down you. Why are you coming all this in the morning? You better do something and earn yourself and eat. Why are you asking from me this food? And that has happened to many monks in the past, even to the Buddha himself. So likewise, so this arms round is one area where we can have a huge blow to our ego, so that we can recognize, okay, I am fully dependent. Even though I may be practicing so many high class things, still I am fully dependent on this very poor peasant, maybe poor person who is simply looking after his children, and from that food I am being dependent. So that sort of connectivity with the layperson, then I am putting myself also to the same ground, and I feel more grateful to them rather than feeling more conceited than them. So likewise, we ourselves have to be, clever or skillful to find out the possibilities, find out the ways to overcome the conceit that can be sort of developing in ourselves. So as we are growing up, as we are becoming more famous, or as we are becoming more popular, or a teacher, or whatever it is, so then how I can overcome that developing trend of ego in myself. So either arms round or respecting others, or say bowing down to the Buddha, or being more humble to the with the other elder monks or something like that. So we have to be very careful what are the possibilities that I can overcome the conceit being developed in myself. So all the possibilities, I feel that Buddha has seen all this, and he has crafted the whole thing so that the conceit in monks can be abandoned through this connectivity, through these dependencies, which has to be maintained with the lay people. Yeah. He is asking this thing.
Avasarai Swami Nasa, thank you for the comments. And I guess one other thing I wanted to say was, the Sutta Nipata, seems to have several suttas where it's, talking about a muni or a sage. And it appears to be saying, these suttas in the Sutta Nipata, there's several that appear to be referring to the muni or the sage, and also to abandoning conceit and, avoiding debates, avoiding arguments, not saying things that don't need to be said, things that are rooted in ego, rooted in conceit, and more or less one could say that it appears, from these suttas that a muni or a sage would kind of be content with themselves to the point where they wouldn't kind of need external validation for what they're doing. And they would know if they did say something, they would know what to say, when to say it, it would be the right words at the right time in the right place. It wouldn't be like a conceited, it wouldn't come from a place of conceit. It wouldn't be like, trying to, let's just, come up with an example here, attack someone else in a debate, or something like that. Again, devoid of conceit. That's the image that one can get from a lot of these suttas about a muni or a sage, is that, in the Sutta Nipata, is that they're devoid of conceit.
Hmm. Yeah, actually, the next verse is also with respect to what we have already discussed. So it is going like this, talking of the same line. Seiyo na tena manyaya nicheyo athavapi sarikho. Putto aneka rupehi natu manang vikappayang titthe. Seiyo natena manyaya nicheyo athavapi sarikho. Putto aneka rupehi natu manang vikappayang titthe. Now all three forms of conceit is explained here. So I'll explain the Sinhala one, the meaning. Emanen mama sreshtemiyai the sreshtayemi either. Nichayami ida natot sadrushayami ida nohanganeya. So those are the three forms of conceit. As Venerable Buddhadatta mentioned, so seiyo means I am equal to the, seiyo means superior. I am superior to the other person. Natena manyaya nichayyo, that means I am inferior to the other person. Athava api sarikho, I am equal to the other person. So these are the three possibilities given. And then putto aneka rupehi natu manang vikappayan titte kulinatvadi aneka sarupen yukta vu ye tama vikalpane karamin nositunaya. So and all these possibilities, now we already have discussed many possibilities available, maybe with learnedness, maybe with one's wealth, etc. So considering any of these possibilities, one is not comparing oneself as superior, equal or inferior. So this is the very connected to what we already have discussed. So probably you can mention the English translation as well.
So again, this is the translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Because of this, one should not think oneself better, nor should one consider oneself inferior or equal. Being affected in various ways, one should not persist in positioning oneself. Right. So these, as Venerable Chandaratana has mentioned, these three different major types of conceit is I am superior, I am the same as, and I am inferior. So we should not think of ourselves as this kind of conceitedness. So it's sometimes it's interesting to think, well, how do the arahants think of themselves? And they would always, and when they would become enlightened, they would inform the Buddha. If they wanted to, they would inform the Buddha. They would not go up and say, I am enlightened, because that would be kind of conceited. What they would say is, this is different. So if we think about it here, I am superior, I am the same as, or I am as inferior. If these are the wrong views, then what is the right view? And it is, this is different. So the only thing we can really say about in comparison, and we have to understand that this comparative quality of the mind, where we instantly and we're always judging ourselves relative to others. Am I superior to this person? Am I the same as this other person? Am I inferior to this other person? You know, where is my position? We're always doing this. And we do this all the time. Even with the same people, we will be constantly jostling. If you ever watch the monkeys, they're always like, who's the boss? Who's the boss? You know, this is always going on. And there's a constant reshuffling of who the boss is. And so the reality as such, this goal is that this is different, that we're all different. There is no, even twins are different. I like to look for the most similar, identical things, and then I look for the difference. So the reality is we are all different. And then that this is a process. It's not I am. This is a process. So this is different. You know, this is actually the right view. This is the view that the arahants have, as opposed to I am inferior, superior, or the same as. And we could make a lot of, you could have a whole comedy about these different wrong views, as the Buddha calls it here. And the one I gets under my skin the most these days is we're all the same. You know, we're not the same. We are all completely different. And it's endless how people will come up and say, hey, bro. You know, and we're not bro. We're not brothers. We're not sisters. We're all completely different, you know.
Other interesting thing is, while being understood that we are quite different, still we live together. I mean, we live harmoniously by respecting each other's differences.
And that's the only wisdom has this ability to handle a paradox, where this is different, and yet this is part of a community. You know, this only wisdom can bridge this this complexity or this paradoxical quality. Whereas you find all other philosophies fall into one camp or the other. We're all the same, or you know, this is inferior or superior. No other philosophy comes out and says we're all different and this is a process. You know, and there's a process of individuality and there's a process of community. So that's why, like, actually Sangha means community. And we have Sangha Nu Sati, which is reflecting on the qualities of what it is that connects us together. And the amazing quality about humans is that we are like this super connected organism. Or I don't know what you want to call it. This super intelligent, super connective. Like if you look at cats, they do not get along with each other. They just cannot live together. They cannot cooperate together at all. Whereas humans are phenomenally good at community. They're phenomenally, unbelievably good at community. And, you know, I just came back from Malaysia. Like, I can travel to Malaysia. I can travel through a whole group of strangers, and it's okay. No monkey can do that. No monkey can walk through a group of other monkeys and survive, because he will be torn apart for being so bold. Unless he's a really big monkey, there's no chance. And even then, one monkey will not go up against a group of other monkeys.
Right.
But
not,
I can walk.
Welcomed.
No, absolutely. It would be an unbelievable
disaster.
Arrogance or threat or not. It would just go so against the nature. But humans, I can walk through an airport and I can go through security and I can do all sorts of funny things and I look different to others and I have people of different races and ethnicities helping me. It's like you cannot even imagine like any animal doing this almost.
So yeah, I think that is the good human quality. Yeah. Even to a stranger that you feel more hospitable, yeah. And so that's what we call as a hospitality.
Yes. Right?
When someone is approaching as a guest, yeah, that you have never seen him, you are not never knowing him, yeah, but still you have some kind of a respect, you have some consideration that he's another fellow human, yeah, being, and you do some kind of, I mean, the hospitality is there.
But it's a very paradoxical thing that this is individual and this is community. And it's this and, you know, we're both and. We're both individual and both community. And only wisdom can see this. And you can see in these days all these different views about you are this category or that category or you're this victim or you're that, what is it called, like beneficiary, or you have this, I use this word again, like you have this inheritance, you're born privileged, and somebody else is like, oh, they're born victims. And it's like really crazy stuff, how everybody's trying to slice and slice and slice, whereas like we are community and, you know, we are individual. And only wisdom has this ability to hold these different ends of the same stick, you know, that as long as we're alive, we're individual and community. It's a really interesting, how to say, it's a really difficult thing to handle, is this, you know, what is this process? What is this I? What is this, you know, individual? What is this community? And as monks, yeah, we do go on Pendabad and we are community. We are part of the fabric of society. And we are these individuals who live in huts in the forest. We are withdrawn. We are individuals. And it's a really interesting dynamic. And again, for me, I spent 5 months inside the monastery. I didn't step my foot outside the monastery. And the first time I'm going outside, I'm going to Malaysia. And again, I'm back into the world. I'm talking to people. I don't normally talk to people. And it's such a strange experience to actively be rubbing against other people, meeting other people in as friends or as completely as a stranger. And, you know, seeing this process of community and fabric and the things that bring us together and the things that push us apart. And all of this kind of I am process. And it's a very profound quality of the mind that we need to be deeply familiar with and become masters of. Not victims of, but masters of. Not reacting to, but responding to this interaction between self and other and other and self, and understanding that conceitedness is always going to arise in that moment, in that meeting, in that encounter, and it is the burning fire. If we get it wrong, we're completely burnt by it, and if we get it right, I think then it would have been beautiful to have met the Buddha and these Arahants. They would have been such amazing people to have, you know, been in the company of. I really think it's worth keeping in mind that that's a great lofty goal to attain. Is what would it be like to not have friction with other people? You know, meaning like you're not burning yourself. You're not this person that has to be a booster and or inferior or we're all bro or something like that. Like it's really, it would be a very you know, where you're just so at peace with the difference. The difference between self and other and self, and you're so at peace with the community between self and other and self. It's something really worth achieving.
Yeah. So actually, we have today only that amount of time. So, sorry.
Just wanted to tell it's a very contradictory thing, because in Anguttara Nikaya Tikkanipata, in the Puggala section, the first sutta, Buddha actually talks about three segmentations. Mm-hmm. Higher to you, equal to you, and lower to you, in terms of Sila, Samadhi, Prajna. So that segmentation is done based on self-conceit. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, you know, you cannot do the comparison. So for you to have a segment who are higher to you in terms of Sila, Samadhi, Prajna, and to equal to you and to lower to you, so you should have your level first.
Mm-hmm. have some understanding.
So it's a very tough journey, Bhante. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very correct. Fine line that we're walking through. We need to be extremely careful to discuss.
True. That's I like to add. Yes, I really like the question. So there is one interesting incident happened when Venerable Ananda approached one nunnery, so in order to preach Dhamma. So he gave a very interesting verse. Tanhang nisaya tanha pahatabbo, manang nisaya manang pahatabbo. So I'm referring the term manang nisaya manang pahatabbo. Using conceit, you are going to abandon conceit. So the simile that he is taking here is, as a monk, you probably hear that one of another monastery or another country or another your colleague attained Nibbana, attained Arahantship, and his reputation is now coming to you also. And you feel, okay, this particular monk is, I know that particular monk, okay, he ordained with me or he higher ordained with me or something, that you get a connection. So if it is possible for him, why can't I do it? So now you are being motivated through conceit. But ultimately, you have to abandon the conceit as well. So it's a beautiful path in a way, because you won't get the energy to initiate without, in a way, the conceit. Because the conceit in that sense is kind of a kind of an energy factor. We can say energy source motivating you. Yes, I also have to do it. He have done that. So why not I am? So that is the conceit, definitely. So, I mean, rooted conceit, driven by conceit, now you are also practicing. But ultimately, once your mind becomes so, say, clear, clean, and all these fetters are easy to understand, then you understand, okay, conceit itself is as a fetter, as a defilement, and then you are slowly capable of abandoning that as well. So you can't do that immediately when you are starting the process. So you need some kind of a very rich, very good, strong motivation factor. So this tanha, the craving itself, is such kind of a motivation factor that you desire. So I want to become an arahant, I want to become an arahant. So kind of a motivation, ambition. And if he can do it, why can't I do it? So it's a comparison, definitely. It's a conceit. And that you need such kind of a motivation to continue the path. But ultimately, when the mind becomes more and more purified, then you can abandon the conceit and the subtle form of craving at the latter stage. So it will be done by the practice itself. I mean, we don't need to worry, how I'm going to abandon conceit by being conceited. So you may start like that, but ultimately the practice will take care of abandoning that subtle form of conceit as well. So, I mean, very interesting. Anyone from outside? I think there are no questions. Okay, if there are nothing else, then we can wind up the session. So we have spent almost 1 hour and 15 minutes. So maybe Venerable Buddhak, do you like to share the minutes?
If we think about the merit of the time and effort we've put together to gather here as a community and listen to the individual points, but then also the community sentiment and the kindness and friendliness that we've come together with. And we can also just spread this kindness and merit with all beings in all directions, outwards and unbounded, freed from any hatred or ill will, just sharing the merit with this, with all beings. And we share that sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sorry, it's a modern merit sharing.
Yeah, maybe.
Just some formula.
So I'll add the...
people have no idea what we're saying.
Okay, I'll add the... traditional one to be more conservative.
Yes.
to be more conservative. Yeah. Etta vata chvamhehi sambatham punya sampadam samme deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyam.